Welcome to The Inevitable, a podcast by Motor Trend.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another episode of Motor Trend's The Inevitable podcast. This is all about the future of automotive. Where are we going? What's it going to look like when cars have no steering wheels? What's the role that software is going to play in this autonomous, EV, electrified, all things are weird future? I'm joined, as always, with my host, co-conspirator Johnny Lieberman. Hi, Johnny.
Hello.
How's your hangover from Pebble Beach?
I've reached the third circle of gout.
Right. So we are this one is a little bit time displaced for you listening at home, but we are like fresh off of the annual Pebble Beach Concours d'Elegance, the Monterey Car Weekend, the annual gathering of fancy people up in the Monterey Bay Peninsula out here in California. And that's actually why we have the guest that we do. He came down. He's really doing us a solid. On his way back home to Detroit, he's we managed to convince him to stop by the studio to do an in-person recording.
He also might have a daughter that lives here, but
yeah, he's got some family reasons. But you know, we are super excited to have the one, the only world's sexiest man or something, Ralph
Gilles,
head of design for Stellantis,
Mr. Dodge.
He was head of SRT. He was head of Dodge. He's unbelievably a 30-year veteran of the company now known as Stellantis, but formerly known as FCA and Cerberus and Chrysler and
Daimler Chrysler.
Right. Yeah. So, he's a good friend.
He is. Well, he's become a good friend.
That we had some touch and go moments there in the past.
Boy, there's one in Amelia Island that I can never repeat publicly. But, right. Oh man!
but he's great. I'm always happy to see him. Always happy to chat with him. He and his lovely wife Doris. We hang out quite a bit at these different automotive events.
Or sometimes not. Remember, we had dinner with at Providence with him.
One of the most
expensive
dinners I've ever had.
That he's ever expensed, actually.
Right. It's great. he's going to come in here. We're going to talk about cars. We're going to talk about hopefully about EVs.
But see, that's the thing with Ralph, though, because the length of his career, but also like what he's done, I could think of like three or four cars. We could spend the entire time on like, tell us about the Chrysler 300. Tell us about, you know, right. Vipers. We could do a whole Viper.
Tell us about SRT, man, and how
is the Viper coming back as an EV?
Right. All that stuff. We should ask him
that.
That'd
be cool. Yeah.
But look, he is really like, there's a lot of characters in the automotive industry. But here's the thing. There are certainly a lot of characters, and he is definitely one of them. He's unmistakable. He's just a great guy. There's also a lot of really forgetful. Like forgettable people, like executives that come in and don't do anything and then you leave and forget their name. Ralph is not one of them. And what's great about him is that he's worked with a lot of really iconic people that you and I both respect.
Sure.
You know, like Tom Gale.
Sure.
That we've known for as a Car of the Year judge, a former head of design for Chrysler. One of my favorite. It's weird to have I'm kind of an industry nerd. It's weird to have a favorite big boss, but Sergio Marchionne.
Yeah.
Rest in peace.
I mean, Zecha. Don't forget Dr. Z.
Work for Dr. Z Zecha, with the
crazy
mustache.
Calls him the walrus guy.
Right. But so he's got – if you're talking about a guy who has stories, and I hope we get to talking about how much money Ralph has lost playing poker on Marchionne's plane. But to talk about a guy who has stories.
But I would say this though. You know, if you look at like the great brands out there, right, there's a human behind the brand, right?
Right.
You know, Ferrari there was an Enzo Ferrari.
Right.
Honda, there was a Mr. Honda who was
Soichiro
Honda, who, you know, his passion like guided that brand for such a long time. There was a Lamborghini, and you know, yes, there was Dodge Brothers. We've kind of don't know much about them except for those weird commercials they did for a while. But I mean, Ralph Gilles has been the face, the muscle behind Dodge for a long time now.
Right.
And I think that's why the cars are as focused as they are. You know what I mean? Is because you actually you have a human that says, no, this is how it has to be. This is what we have to do.
Right.
And I think that's cool.
And he's the kind of guy you absolutely want behind the brand because he is so passionate about it. And it's not a bunch of hot air. Like this guy races on the weekend.
Yeah.
He owns a bunch of company
cars we can't talk about.
Company cars, right? And then, as Johnny mentioned, the cars – that he loves from other brands that he doesn't want anybody to know about.
Right.
But you know this, but that's fine. Like I would hope, like his bosses or whoever, like understand that car guy is going to do a car guy thing. Like they're going to you respect that this brand makes a great car. I need to understand it so I can make our own products better. But whatever. Well, hopefully we'll get into that.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I'd say we just get him in here.
Just dive right in?
Yeah, let's just do it.
All right, so let's bring on Ralph.
Damn.
Anyways, Ralph Gilles.
Oh, my God. We are so excited to have you here. And we should set the stage just a little bit for – this is sort of a time-displaced episode. You are actually in town because it is just after the 2022 Pebble Beach Concours d'Elegance. You were up there doing your thing. You were judging. Yeah. You had shown your car, Hallucination. You had it at the Quail. I can't believe you drove it in. That's amazing. Dude. Talk about a real car guy. Drove your car like 300 miles all the way down from the San Francisco Bay Area to L.A.
Just to see you.
Just to see us.
That just dawned on me.
Thank you. Right. Well, also, you may have family in town. But yes, but thank you for coming in. This is going to be awesome. I mean, normally I prepare like a 5-page dossier and
really creepy
stalker stuff. But I feel like we've had a lot of conversations. We all know each other. But we, you know, for the people who are listening who don't know who you are, we should probably do a quick walk through your career.
But real quick, describe yourself.
Wow,
how would you describe yourself?
I'm a man child that has never grown up. No, yeah, I mean the car guy thing is pretty cliche, but I think I still am, right?
Yeah,
I'm still
sure.
Exhibiting that behavior, so to speak, since I was 7 years old. Nothing has changed. I still look at cars, whether it's our own company's cars or competitor cars. I'm excited by the industry. I'm excited by, you know, 50-year-old hot rods to brand new stuff like EV6. I asked my wife on the way here, what do you think of the Hyundai, you know, EV6? I'm always assessing the industry because it's changing.
That's a Kia EV6 for those of you playing at home.
So stuff like that, like I'm very aware. So yes, I'm a hyper
car guy,
hyper antenna out kind of car guy.
Okay.
But my day job, I'm a designer, industrial designer. I am not an engineer. My mother still can't figure that out, but that's okay. So I run a tiny office in Auburn Hills of 380 people for years. Almost over 12 years, I ran FCA Design Global, which we had offices in Turin, China, South America. So a big group of well over 1,200 people. Now we've merged with Peugeot, so we are split a little bit. So I still run Maserati and European Jeep and all the North American brands and South American concerns. But honestly, I've got good leads that are running those regions pretty well, like Klaus Busse, I'm sure you've heard of.
Oh, yeah.
Klaus is a good friend.
Peter Fassbender in South America and a whole host of amazing people in Auburn Hills that I work with.
Most of whom I follow on Instagram.
Yeah.
To try to get an eye into what's coming out of Stellantis.
Yeah, and I'm a family man. I got two kids and an awesome wife, 26 years.
Wow. Congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you.
That's
great. And I'm empty nesting, so that's how I can get to do fun stuff on the weekends like this.
Right. And you look like, you know, you're still 39, which is annoying.
Thank you.
To both me and
Well, I'm just going to drop this bomb later, but you open the door. I mean, we are sitting
avocados. Avocados.
Well, we're sitting across from a celebrity. He was in People magazine, 1999, sexiest, the Richard Gere issue with a picture.
How do you know this stuff?
A picture, by the way, I should say, it looks like they cut the head off of Denzel Washington and put you in his clothes.
Well,
because
my clothes.
I know, but those clothes are like, they're so 90s.
Our man Schaefer saw the picture, said, he looks like he's straight out of like a Paula Abdul video. I'm like, that's an excellent reference because that was popular at the time.
I wish I could go back in time and jump into that body and
what are you talking about?
Yeah. With what I know now.
Yeah, just joking. Well, what you know now, right.
Well, so you were born in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Are you?
I'm American, yeah. I'm actually, my passport's American, but spiritually I feel Canadian.
Do you consider yourself Haitian-Canadian, Haitian-American-Canadian?
All the above, yeah. But okay. My parents are obviously first gen. They moved here, immigrated to New York. Okay. Had us, and then we moved to Montreal when I was 10 months old. And I have an older brother. Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Who's because way more successful is what I heard.
Absolutely, he's amazing. He saves people's lives every day, so right. Hats off to him. He's a doctor.
He's a doctor.
ER doc in Chicago, no less.
Right. This is like Ed's family. Right. Like where Ed's the
total black sheep. Yeah. Busted.
I'm dumbest like, person right. in my family.
My dad used to look at me, you're going to do Velvet Elvises your whole life.
So I'm not going to go way super deep on the background, but you have this really great story about you wanted to be a car designer when you were super young, and you rode into Chrysler at the time, apparently addressed it to Lee Iacocca, who passed the letter on to
Neil Walling.
Neil Walling. Who wrote you back a nice letter, said there's a school for this if you want to
Yeah, a few schools actually, one here in California, four schools, and I ended up going to the one that was geographically closest, which was Detroit.
CCS.
Yeah, a cool 600 miles away from Montreal.
College of Creative Studies.
Correct.
So, and then you, just going real quickly through it, you entered the auto industry in 1992.
Correct.
At a design office for what was then the Chrysler Corporation.
Correct. And they had just, I mean, the building, the paint was still drying at the New Tech Center in Auburn Hills. So it was very exciting.
Yeah. So let me, I wrote down a fun question. So since you've been at Chrysler, how many companies have you worked for? Because you're rare in the industry, is that?
Okay, I think four companies, nine CEOs.
Okay, so Chrysler, Daimler Chrysler, FCA, and Stellantis.
Oh, I forgot, Cerberus.
Cerberus Capital. Yeah.
So five.
Ah,
right. See, we try not to remember that particular time.
Yeah, that's a good one to forget.
On none of them were, honestly, all of them were positive experiences. I learned so much from every, because it's like everyone says, you've been there 30 years.
You've been there 30 years, which is
so bizarre, right? For nobody stays anywhere 30 years.
That's crazy.
But again, it's changed around me. Like,
you also look like you're 30. That's what's so weird. So,
okay. What do you want, bro?
Right. But hang on. The question I had was, when you entered, because now you've been, a 30-year veteran of the same company, and you are like, you know, you got the Detroit, and I've seen your, like, made in Detroit, the shirts, and of course you're dyed in the wool, you have all the cars. But when you went in, what was the hot car? What were you like? When you, let's say you had, like, senior year project or whatever, like, you were.
Okay.
What was the car? What was really doing it for you back then?
Wow,
you
got that's a business? Big question, bro, because. Okay, so I grew up in the ugly 80s, ugly 70s actually.
As did we all.
Yeah, so I grew up in Montreal. The Formula One circus came to town every year, and you go down to downtown in all the northern.
And you were aware of that?
Yeah, no. We all pilgrimage. We couldn't afford to go to watch a race, but we'd just be in downtown and soak in. And the guys from New York, the rich guys from Toronto, New York, would come in their 930s and their Countaches and Murays, and that's when I'm like, whoa, wait a second. That's what a gorgeous car looks like. And then when I walk to school, I'm looking at, you know what I mean. Some unusually badly designed Pintos and things like that.
But also, just real quick, one of my, I would say, most formative memories, because my dad's from Montreal.
Oh, I know that.
Yeah. Cool. And when I was nine.
You just got cooler to me.
Thank you. When I was about nine, we were in, you know, the old part of the city, you know, the big gray cobblestones, and there was an orange Countach. Just by itself.
It's a car city, man. They love cars.
But, like, again, I never, you know, I was nine. I wasn't really paying attention to cars yet. Like, my dad talked to me about cars, but I just, whatever. I grew up in the suburbs. Cars were boring. And I saw this thing, and my dad luckily just let me stand there and stare at it for, like, a half hour. Really changed my life.
I had the same experience with the white one. Same exact experience.
Crazy. Really?
I'm sitting there, drool. Yeah, like, why does this thing look like a spaceship?
Yeah, exactly. And I asked, it's funny you said it, because I asked, Valentino Balboni about, like, what was the first, what did you think when you saw, like, a Countach running around San Agustin in 1972? He's just like, oh, the Countach. And he said it was like a spaceship had come down and was running around the
breakaway
farms.
Moment. I judged this weekend with Val.
Mr.
Balboni, right next to me.
Oh, dude.
We spent like hours together. He's so cool. We couldn't go anywhere because everyone wants to take pictures with him.
That's. It's funny because, like, you know, like Leno was saying, he's just kind of not going because he can't take a step without being stopped. Right. And it's worse than
I think he missed it because this is like post-COVID for them. First time back, and he loved it.
Right.
He was digging.
All right. So then supercars were the thing.
Supercars, anything well-designed, and you're going to laugh at me, but I remember growing up and seeing the Taurus show, the first-generation Taurus.
Oh, I'm not going to laugh.
It was
a great
gorgeous car. And I was like, whoa, wait, another successful, beautiful, the XR4 Ti, a few of them would leak into Canada, were cool. But honestly, it's going to sound, again, cliche, I hate this, but the Viper, man, when the Viper came out at the 89 Motor Show, and I was already at CCS then, and until then, it was acclaim after acclaim, and GLH and all great cars, but nothing earth shattering. And then I saw the Portofino, and then the Viper. I'm like, whoa, Chrysler's on a warpath here. They're doing something. And I already had that letter, but it didn't mean I was going to work for them necessarily.
Right.
But I started watching what they were doing, and they were fighting for relevance, right? So Tom Gale and Hurlitz, who were running the show back then, I don't think Lutz was there yet, But they were trying to say, hey, the world. And they had just bought Lamborghini and were trying to figure out what to do with it back in those days. And they were just burping out these incredible concepts that got my attention.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad you said that because Tom Gale's concept cars should be a museum exhibition.
We have them. We still have them. Yeah, they're all on display.
Put them in a museum, you know. He sat down one time with his laptop and he had a file of them because he had given a presentation. And he went through, like, I don't know, 50 that he had done, and like Copperhead, you know, I mean, just like the greatest.
We would do five a year. I mean, those were the days.
You know? Yeah.
He's so modest about it, too.
I know. I was like, I had to write a story about him one time, and I'm like, I need a quote from you. And he goes, I like hot rods. That's the quote.
So we have them all in a special place. It's not open to the public yet, but we're thinking about opening it up in Michigan. We had
a special place for it.
Yes, we do.
So wait, well, this is wild because
also real quick, we can't just gloss over the Viper.
That's where I'm going.
First gen Viper. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was saying like you joined in '92. Yeah. They had just purchased Lamborghini.
Yeah.
Right.
They had it for a bit. Yeah.
Is that why you? I mean, were you just like you saw Tom Gale's concepts? They're like, oh my god, this car I dreamed about, the Countach. Now we might have a chance, or it doesn't work that way. What were you going in as?
We're not so cocky to think that hey, these auto companies want to hire us. It wasn't that automatic at that age. I was happy to get a job, honestly, right. But I did get an offer at the time from Honda. They had something in Ohio, and Ford was looking at me, and then Chrysler, and then that letter is in the back of my mind. I kind of forgot about the letter, to be honest, being a young kid.
Mm. Sure.
But those cars cemented the deal. Like, okay, whatever they're up to, they're on to something. And we knew that building was being built because it was big news. They had toured some of the interns on their junior year.
Okay.
And we're like, wait a minute, Chrysler's building. Have you seen the tech center? It is. Mm-hmm. It's like the Pentagon. It's huge.
Right.
So at the time, we're like, okay, they're up to something. And I couldn't. And we all dove in. Plus, they were the underdog. And to this day, I love that. I love that we are considered. It's not true anymore, but
historically, you always were. And then, you know, I think a lot of people. At the time, especially, we're really inspired by what Iacocca did. Like, yes, okay, you know, he borrowed money, but like, man, they came out swinging.
Yeah,
right?
They did.
You know, and I remember I don't know.
If you can find a better car, buy it.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember that commercial?
Right. Yeah, no, but I must have been like 10 or so. I tried to read his book. I have no idea what was in the book. I mean, you know, it's just like, I didn't like cars. I was reading Iacocca's book. But
this coffee is incredible.
Yeah, it's good coffee.
Wow. One of the best coffee I've ever had in my life.
What was the first big project you worked on?
First big project was the LHs, the Concords.
Beautiful.
The beautiful cab
forward.
Underrated.
So you have to realize, so I'm getting hired in and there's nothing but K cars around me.
Right.
The Viper was, okay, an aberration, we thought. So we go in the studio and we see these cab forward things being created. We're like, oh, that's a concept. No, that's production. We're like, what? So our heads blew up.
And that was the Intrepid?
And the Concord, the Chrysler Concord.
The Concord was the LHS, the luxury one with the notchback.
They were amazing cars. And honestly, if they had better wheel-to-tire proportions and better headlamp designs, they could actually almost look current.
Right.
No, totally. I remember I would have been like 15, 16, 17 around then. And I remember reading whatever magazine I was reading, like, you know, about the Intrepid, and I was like, that's so cool. I went to a dealership as like a 16-year-old to check out the Intrepid, you know.
And that's all Tom. I mean, he was, you know, he's part engineer, part designer. So to get that windshield that far cantilevered, that was a feat of engineering.
So what were you – but specifically, what were you
– Oh, I was working in interiors. I started in interiors because my thesis at the time when there was only 13 of us graduated. It was one of the smallest classes CCS ever had. Everyone was doing cars, and I tried one, and I just wasn't in the mood because I thought, let me do something different. And I did an interior, a full-size, that you could sit in. Buck, and it got the attention, were needing interior. I've always had an affinity for interiors. I think it's the under-celebrated part of the car.
Right.
You know,
which is weird because it's the part you spend the most time in. It's your office, right?
Exactly.
So, okay.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm dominating, so Johnny, did you have one?
Let's just skip ahead to the
The Dark Times? Can we talk about the Dark Times?
No.
Can we talk about the Caliber?
We need a couch for the Dark Times.
Oh, I don't care. Who cares about the Dark Times? No, I was going to say, when I first knew who Ralph was...
People Magazine's sexiest issue, right?
Yes. I was in college. I wasn't reading People. But I remember I saw a Chrysler 300. Hmm. The one you worked on.
Led. I was the manager.
But it was like there must have been an engineer that lived in my neighborhood because it was like – it was just parked at, you know, probably his girlfriend's house or something like that. It was like on the street and I was just like –
What part of town?
Silver Lake. All right. And I was just like, what on earth is that? You know what I mean? Like it was just – I just was like, I thought Bentley has a new car out, you know? Yeah. And then it was just a time in my life when I wasn't really like consuming car media. I just moved back from New York and I was just, you know, whatever, 25 or 6 or something. And just, you know, chasing girls around. But like, I could not believe this thing. It was green. Yeah. You know, and it was just – I hadn't seen a car like that in a long time.
I'm going to use this opportunity to clear the record because you know for me, Freeman Thomas.
Yep.
Yeah.
Amazing. One of my most celebrated – I love him. So he was in Advance at the time. So he was running Advance out of Auburn Hills. And him and Bob Hubick, who's long time retired, had this idea of bringing back the Ghia. Remember the Ghia times? Mm-hmm. And we had that Chrysler Kronos concept, one of those amazing Tom Gale's, John Hurlitz concepts. That harken back to the big Ghia front ends, the big giant grills, and you see them to this day.
There was
the letter series.
Yeah, there was a dual Ghia, the yellow one, black one, and the one with pebbles.
Now, keep in mind, in those days, in the late 90s, the 300M was so successful. It actually was a runaway success. It was probably the sportiest of all the cab forwards. So at the time, it was like, oh, let's just turn the crank handle and make another one of these. And then Freeman was like, no, we need something retro. And the sketch that Bob Hubick did, bless his heart, is very close to where we ended up. I fell in love with it. So my studio was a rear drive studio. We took it on, and we could have done an evolutionary. We did an evolutionary one, but I purposely kept that one burning. At the time, I won't say his name, but our leader didn't like the car. He was like, it's too retro. It's too old. Windows, everything was wrong with it. Everything that's was wrong with it.
Right. That's so how you know it's a good design.
The belt line was too
long. Yeah, so we did it anyway, and Freeman moved on to other things, but I just kept noodling it and working on it, and then finally put in the dome, and it was like – everyone called it the brick because it was so anti-aero at the time. But it worked.
Well, that's actually great because I was going to ask you that question, which is success has many fathers. Yeah. You know, you get a lot of credit for that. But I like how you're clearing the air.
I've always – every chance I get, I try to because it's not just me. I mean, I get a lot of credit.
So you outlined a lot of the names, but so was Tom still – Tom was still ultimately the
– He was in the background. He was just retiring at the time.
And a board member at that point.
Yeah, Trevor Creed was the head of design. I was head of Rear Drive Studios. That's why I ended up in my camp, and I loved it. I took it in with open arms.
That's different.
Dave McKinnon was there too.
What year would that –
that would have been 2000.
Right, because then the car eventually hit the market in
04 as an 05 model year.
So this would have been like 2003.
They must have been testing.
Yeah, and it was just parked in like this like fun part of Silver Lake. And I remember I looked it up, and then there was a picture of you on the internet. I'm like, what? Wait, who? This kid?
So funny, that car was supposed to be a failure. We took it to the clinic, and everyone thought, it's going to bomb in the clinic. It was the opposite. It was like everyone lost their you-know-what over when they saw the car.
In the clinic?
Yeah. The other one, the swoopy next-generation 300M, just kind of, whatever, but... Right. So that's when everyone is like, okay, Ralph might be onto something here. So anyway.
So this is something that's interesting. The people who are maybe sort of casual listeners are not understanding about how car design works. I was just thinking about this the other day. By the time a vehicle hits the market, by the time like we actually get to talk to you about it, like as a designer, this is like 3 years, 4 years ago.
Yeah,
you're like, you were like over.
We're way on.
To like, I mean, the life cycle is like.
Because it's, 6 months of sketching. 2 years of development, then we hand it off to engineering, and they go make the tools and test it for another 2 years. So it's 4, sometimes 5 years.
Right. And then it comes back. And then once it goes on sale, that's literally like the back half of this 10-year program. That's like the marketing guys and the sales team.
But Ed, honestly, like when I see one of our cars that we've just worked on the road coming the other direction or somewhere, I'm on vacation, that it still hits you. It's like, whoa. To see it in context is so different.
Right?
It's such a cool feeling.
Yeah.
Great feeling.
Yeah, that's very cool.
So we don't get to talk about the dark times at all?
I mean,
do you have a couch?
You can lay down.
Turn the lights down.
Can we
get some incense going?
How much of the dark times?
Need my feet rubbed while you talk about the dark times.
Schaefer, that's our photographer. How much of the dark times is just because of Daimler Chrysler?
I hate to associate to any because all of those initially, I think all of those mergers are good, well intended in the beginning. To be honest with you.
Oh, no, they were.
And then market forces come along and wreck the show, right? And we were kind of not on solid footing because we were in between platforms and all that stuff. So I don't look at them at dark times. I look at them as opportunities. And if you look back now, it made us stronger. There's a lot of great engineers that came through those times, me and designers that are battle-hardened because of those times. And we also learned what not to do. We learned how product is king and quality is king and all that stuff. So the company has just had thicker and thicker armor through those times. So I don't consider them dark times. They're interesting times. Very, very interesting.
They're a teachable moment.
Exactly.
Because I'll tell
you.
That's
how I look at it. You know?
It was great to hear from – to get Tom's – Tom has been a long time guest judge on Car of the Year. Yeah. And we – like Johnny and I was talking about it. Like, he gave us basically new eyes. Like he's talked about stuff like how to see a car, like grain and gloss and gesture.
Yeah,
and,
but also just like putting the car in California sunlight – and standing 50 feet back and just staring
just
at it.
Right?
And, like, you know, that's how you actually look at a design.
And you got to put in context. I'm a young person at the time during those dark times that you speak of, and I was oblivious. You know, I knew there was stuff going on. And of course, there's greed in the background. Who knows, right? But it didn't bother me.
But the thing he told me that was really interesting, because I came from like this more compact car like side, and we literally had like a neon SRT4, and it was like awesome, and like, wow, I think it's great. And then, like, the follow-up was that Caliber SRT, and it was like the hardest plastics, like not grained at all, right? Yeah. And like sharp angles, like you would be ow, like this interior is like crazy. And Tom was like, Ed, that's what cost cutting does. That's when you pull when you just don't devote any money invested in any part of this. That's what you get. Did it work? Yeah. Did it drive okay? Sure. Did I want to buy it? No. Like, but this is, and I now look at that and go, oh well. It's interesting now. You don't find cars like that level anymore.
No, everybody learned the lesson, and I don't know what we were thinking back then, honestly. Even the Grand Cherokee had a plastic interior back then.
Right.
Back in the 09, 08, 07.
But it wasn't necessarily you guys,
but
the accountants driving the ship on that.
Yes. Okay. But
and also, I don't know if it was failing, but the unmerging.
But like, I'll say.
Right? I mean, there's corporate priorities. Like,
true.
Protect the three-pointed star at all costs.
But the difference now, when Sergio Marchionne showed up in 09, the thing he did is he found brand shepherds. Mm-hmm. So back then, there was nobody that owned a brand. The brand was floating between one exec to another, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Now we have people that are literally like Tim Kaniskis and you name
is
it.
Dodge.
Yeah, yeah. And you have, you know, Christian Meunier, that his life is eat, breathe, sleep, Jeep. Right. And even myself, I've divided my studios into brand heads. Like Mark Allen, he basically goes to every staff meeting that Christian has. Mm. And that way you care. You go deep into the product.
Right, right.
So that's what we've been doing since 09, and it's actually working really well. And by the way, PSA does that too.
I just remember, you know, when I don't say worked with you, but like saw you speaking. Mm-hmm. And it was one of my favorite car launches I've ever been on. It was that big one in San Francisco, 2011. Mm. And you had just kind of like revitalized every single product the company made. It was like emerging from bankruptcy. And it was like, remember, it was like Charger, Challenger, minivan, Journey.
I remember that. Yeah.
Everything, you know. And I remember it was really a cool moment. You stood there. You were wearing like blue jeans, I remember, which is unusual to be talked to on stage with someone wearing jeans. Yeah. And big American flag. We're on Pier 40, whatever it was. And it was just cool. It was like, wow, this is okay. Now this has given me a little hope, because it was like Nitro and Caliber and Journey that I've been driving from, you know, 2008 or so. It's kind of like, oh boy, I see why they're bankrupt. Mm-hmm. To like this, and then everything was good. You know, I mean, the refreshes were good. We went up to Sears Point, whatever it's called, Sonoma. Yeah. And it was like, all right.
Those are some great ride and drives. The Durango was coming out.
Yeah, Durango. Oh, yeah. We went off-roading in the Durango. Yeah, everything. It was great.
We were supposed to go, but shit did.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah. I mean, you know.
So how did you?
But it was – I'm just saying, it was impressive. I'm like, this guy is like impressive.
Well, behind all that was I can't tell you how much team building we had to
but
do.
We're here to talk about you.
Ah,
okay, team building. Go ahead.
But we had to do so much alignment to get to those cars that you talk about and then to where we are today. We had to give – the give a you-know-what factor, right? And then we got everyone rallied around it.
I have that poster still. You gave me one. You gave me one.
Yeah, I have one in my garage.
For those of you.
We only made 500 of them. They're floating around. They're semi-contraband.
So there's a poster that
hang on real quick, because
– I'm trying to explain it.
I talked to a lot of the Germans who left from Daimler Chrysler. And they were like, oh, these poor Dodge guys, like, you know, we were mean to them or whatever, you know, we defunded them. And, you know, it wasn't a good time.
So in the darkest period, apparently there was a morale problem within the halls of Auburn Hills, right? And a rogue senior design executive perhaps contracted their agency, Wieden & Kennedy, to produce a small run of posters that said in very big print, give a poop. But not poop.
Yeah, it said give a shit. It was very cool.
Right.
Yeah.
And there might have been the Dodge logo, the two slashes.
Yeah. Well. But it was important.
You might have gotten trouble for handing those out. I have one. I framed it. It was in my bathroom over appropriately over the toilet. I mean, until I got serious with a certain woman who's now my wife, and she's like, "Yeah, that's cool, frat bro."
It's funny, Doris. I still have it in our guest bathroom, and Doris just told me, like, "I think that needs to come down."
Well, it's great. So I love it. I think it's a cherished. When I finally have my huge garage,
but it's important. I think it's really important because you know if you. I don't know. I always get inspired by watching like when car companies do well and when they pull together, you know. And I've seen it both ways. I've seen when the, you know, because we're lucky. We have this incredible access. We get to talk to people, meet people, hang out with people. And you can tell when something's going well.
The mojo's off, right?
Yeah, and like, and I remember like this one. It was a Kia event. It was a long time ago before I was at Motor Trend, which is like 13 years ago. And like you could just tell like everyone who was there, they were gone in a week. You know, they knew it. They just didn't care at all.
Well, so to the question of brand steward, then was going rogue like that? Because that was before you were head of Dodge Brand, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Does that does showing that kind of passion, was that what got you to like? How did you go from basically the design guy to head of the brand, which you then did twice?
It was Marchionne. I mean, he just was looking for someone that he thought fit the brand in terms of. He understood Dodge was something more than just a car. You go to A to B. It's a club, right? It's muscle cars, performance. And he thought, hey, you race, you like those things, and you like Vipers, go for it. You know, like, and he just
you race. Right?
It was like that.
Yeah,
he called me to the office. Yeah. I kid you not. He called me to the office like that. He's doing a bunch of stuff. He had a bunch of Apple computers everywhere, smoking his Marlboros, and he looks over his rim of his glasses. Goes, Ralph, you like Dodge, right? I go, yeah. Sit down. And 2 minutes later, he goes, you have the job. I'm like. And that's it. That was it. Go away. Go do it.
Right.
Figure it out. Like, right. No instructions.
I mean, this whole podcast could be just stories about Marchionne. I would love
it. Okay, I should ask him. It's like, okay, I wasn't sure if I still had design, if I left. Yeah, I wasn't sure. Not one penny of a raise.
Right.
That is ginormous. Two jobs now.
And but like, so could we talk about Sergio Marchionne, just so everyone listening.
Rest in peace.
Because I know, here's the thing. We never got close to him. He was one exec.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah. He's pretty elusive, dude.
I got to go to Auburn Hills and gave gave Truck of the Year. I got a ride in a golf cart with him. I got this great picture. Me holding the board. He's like right on my shoulder like this. And I've some of the most cherished pictures are that one time he told me when I gave Truck of the Year, I got to go to Auburn Hills, and he's like, Ed, we've only held. This will be the third time we've held an all hands, an all company meeting, and the first was when we went into bankruptcy. The second is when we exited. And then now you're here to give – and you're giving good news. And like, I was freaked out because there's a picture of me standing on a stage and Auburn Hills, the atrium.
Yep.
You have like 5 stories and everybody – it's like being at
the – was like 6,000 people.
Yeah. It's being at the Coliseum.
Yeah,
and I'm like, hi. Here's a – it was actually that day I realized I got the best job in the world, man. Like I am not firing people. I'm not announcing layoffs. I'm like going like – you guys won an award. How cool is that? Here you go. Nobody cares who I am. There's an award.
But tell us about him. Because I know I remember one time in conversation he came up and you got really reverential about it. And you were just like – I think it was right after he died. We ran into each other somewhere.
But, and it's what – I've got to respect his family, right? We don't know what's going – we met his sons and and obviously some time has passed. But everybody – it's one of those people everybody still talks about.
Yeah. Mm.
And some execs go away and you're like – What was his name? But Sergio is a brand. He's a spirit. Right. He's an energy source, and he was hilarious. I mean, we would unfortunately have a lot of weekend meetings. We were his family. That's one thing we all say now. The his ex execs. We all say we're his family. We didn't realize it.
So you guys, I remember Klaus told me this story real quick. You guys worked for like 364 days
practically,
straight or
with
some crazy
story?
There was
no weekends for like at least 5 of the 10 years I worked with him.
We should get Doris in here to talk about
that. That's Ralph's wife. Who's that?
Yeah, we were always and we'd watch Formula One together on Sundays because he loved that. But we would meet right through Saturday because he was so busy running. He was on the board of other companies. He was running this and that. And
right.
So the only time he could find was like, all right, and you'd check in at 8 o'clock Saturday. We'd start at 9.
So what made him like such a good auto executive?
His attention, his ability to process a lot of information, like a lot of good CEOs, but his passion. He was a shoulder rubber.
Right.
What I mean by that is like, you can do this. You know, we would be down on ourselves. We're like, oh man, we can't. And he goes, no. Like the truck thing. Like, no, we can take him out. Go. And he gave us what we had to do. He gave us some marching orders and he was a believer in us. And we didn't – at the time it sounded like shouting and poking you in the forehead, but in retrospect, he was a coach, basically.
Right.
A really good coach.
Because that's a great point to bring up the truck, because, I mean, I remember we did that – I think it was right when the new Ram 1500 came out, the first one under Sergio. And I remember it was me and Scott Evans – I forget who else. But we did the Comparo, and we went up to Big Bear or something. Yeah. And we were just like – we can't even believe – like, how could this be the, you know, used
that
to be a Dodge truck?
But the only program I've ever seen that we would go in, we'd be over budget, like, seriously, because we put soft materials, we put stitches everywhere, and he goes, that's okay. Like, wow. Normally it's a heart extraction from your behind.
But it was like a walloping, because, like, it was like, you know, like the ride quality was better. You know, it looked better. The materials were better. The technology. At the time, I mean, you know, like Ford had Sync. The screen was the size of like a credit card.
And this is 2013, 2014.
Yeah, something like that.
We had coil springs. Everyone laughed at us, but it actually worked. Ram boxes.
Ram boxes. But it was like, you know, you remember the comparison. You know, a lot of times, especially getting there now, it's like everything is so good that the comparison tests are pretty close. But like when something just walks away, like last time I saw it was we did Honda Accord, that segment, and it's like, whatever. Everyone's second place. Right. No one's close. No one can get close. And that's how that was at the time.
I think the success, and correct me if I'm wrong, with Mark Cuny, is that he was admittedly not a car guy.
Like he started off as a banker.
Right.
But he had a collection of cars.
Right.
I don't know if he bought them to impress his friends or whatever, but man, when I first met him, this is a story I don't tell often, but we don't know him from Adam. We're told to meet in Bulacco, all of us. Mm. And half the team that were at Bulacco disappeared a few weeks later.
That's a test track in Italy.
Yeah, great Alfa Romeo's test track. And we're waiting and waiting. And he shows up in a helicopter, comes down.
Subtle.
And then a black, the most beautiful black Ferrari Enzo pulls up. Test driver goes out, doors open. He comes out of plane like Jim's on. He's smoking a cigarette. Puts it out, jumps in the Enzo, and disappears. And all we hear is...
Well, that's pretty good. That's a good
V12. And all of us are like, that's our boss. How cool is that?
flexing on you.
And he was
like
gone. Yeah. Everything he did was calculated, so who knows.
Right, sure.
20 minutes later, he comes back. Let's call the meeting. And he established, you know.
Dominance.
Right.
All right.
That's hilarious.
But also, like, I want to work for the guy that's like, first of all, black Enzo is even cooler.
Not exactly.
Even cooler than an Enzo.
Everything he did was, all he wore was black.
Right.
I have one of his sweaters. In fact, I do. No, I asked.
I think they're J. Crew sweaters.
No, they're Land's End.
Land's End, that's right.
So I have one because I was like.
He had 80 of them or something.
Yeah, well, that was his shtick. It was like he had the backpack full of blackberries, one for each time zone, and then he had
running low on the car.
And then
okay.
And then he had these Land's End sweaters.
Your wife is saying no, by the way.
Okay.
Right. look, and then we can get off Sergio because we just got the halfway mark on this thing. We got lots to talk about. But the thing that impressed me about him the most was because he wasn't a car guy, but he was a quote machine. We love him as journalists because he would do these quotes. And then brutal honesty. I forget which show it was. You guys had just announced that you were no longer doing 200 and Dart.
Yeah.
And he was just like, at a press conference, I think I remember seeing your PR guys just wince because he was like, yeah, we totally screwed that one up. We basically copied the roof line of the Hyundai Sonata without checking, and it turns out nobody wants to sit in a rear seat package like that. So it's done. I was just like,
wow.
When you say something like that, there's really no article you can write.
It was to make room for the truck.
Yeah.
And the money we would lose shutting the plant down and putting the truck in there was still nothing compared to what we've made.
Sure.
Right.
And the Rams are built now in that plant, so.
Right.
So, all right, Johnny, where do you want to go?
I can go a lot of places. I just, real quick, because I'm fascinated by the whole industry, but you mentioned people like the 300 at the clinic. Mm-hmm. I've done a couple clinics in my time, and I've heard what people said that, like, don't, you know, work with cars. Like, just real quick, like, as a professional designer now with 3 decades of experience, like, how valuable are these clinics?
So the 300 clinic, to correct a little bit, was not a normal clinic. This was a clinic where we had people. We showed them the car. We turned the lights down. We let them sleep on pillows for 30 minutes. They got up, and we said, write the first thing you think about. It was the most unique. We had an amazing head of research back then.
Okay.
David Boswick was his name. And then we collected all the papers and said, thank you very much. But one lady ran out. when the lights went down, she got up and said, "These people are freaks," and ran out of the room.
I'm with her.
But everyone else stayed and did the thing. And we did it three different times in Chicago and Atlanta and California. And we read all the papers, and they all wrote the same thing. Positive imagery of my uncle taking me to the movies, blah, blah, blah. Going out to ice cream. It was this incredible Americana.
Right.
Positive energy.
Right, right.
And the other one did the same thing. It was like, okay, pleasant car.
Right. So there's nothing. No emotional response. So,
and that's all we needed. We didn't want to do traditional research because we would have been told that the grill's too big, blah, blah, blah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Because I've taken place in a couple of these, taken part in a couple of these, and it's just always like, what do they get out of it? What is anyone? And also, I imagine everyone working in the design studios got a master's from.
I kind of bring Sergio back in this a little bit because he hated clinics.
Good. I think I like him even more.
In the 10 years that I worked with them, I think we did 3 clinics.
Okay.
The minivan. The minivan twice because he wasn't convinced. And I think the
Durango. And if you're going to clinic something.
And then a Durango because he thought we should just have a Jeep and not have a Dodge. And then we proved to him that the Dodge had its own reason and that was it. The rest was never clinic.
Right, right, right. Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
But they are important. Honestly, I do value them because at my maturity level, I can discern between someone reacting to something they're not used to yet versus something really wrong. Or the other thing is the emotion, right? If you can strike a chord in someone with a design, sometimes if it's violently offensive to them, that's not necessarily bad.
Right.
If they say it the right way. So we look for these little intonations.
You know? I got it. Okay.
Speaking of violently offensive.
That's a segue and a half.
Well, I was not going to – we have to spend time on this.
Let's go.
No.
Oh.
When you were head of SRT
yes.
And you were doing a certain car called the Viper.
Yeah, my third job. I forgot about that.
Right. Doing the certain car called the Viper.
Yes.
You kind of got into it with Motor Trend over.
Oh, you're going to bring that up.
So, and I figure out that you guys are right here.
You know, there might be a guy out there who punched me a few times.
I thought we were over that, bro. I hung that picture up in my man cave. It's up there.
Okay.
I think you signed it.
Yeah. to recount for our audience.
And every time I go to Laguna Seca, which I was at yesterday, I can see, yes.
So, Johnny, why don't you frame this up a little bit in terms of what we're talking
about. So the fifth generation Viper comes out. It's very beautiful. And it was good, but it wasn't great on the track. And Ralph gets in touch with us somehow and says, we're building one. We want Randy Popes to drive it at Laguna Seca. It was the Viper TA, and it set the record, the production car record. It beat the Devon, which I don't think counts as a production car, but it was a Viper engine kind of kit car-y thing.
But you glossed right over the first time we drove it around the track when stuff was falling off of it, right?
Oh, no. That was after. You're confused. That was after.
Okay.
But we have this big Kumbaya. I think at the Detroit show, New York show, we gave you the magazine, Randy and Ed were sitting there, and there's a picture.
Do you want to hear the Situation Room moment?
Yeah.
So you guys kind of semi-tore up the Viper at the time, right? So I called a meeting.
Real quick. The Viper
TA. Scott's going to jump through the glass right here.
The Viper. Scott punched me 3 times. I could sue. assault. I don't know the statute of limitations. I think you're all right, Scott. That's the PR guy in the other room. So Viper TA was great. Then a white one came to Best Driver's Car. And that was the seat. Came off, the pedals came off.
That had been in some show.
Yes.
3 bolts were like, we had one
it had
of, one
been
of the
beat
bolts.
Up
the
by pedal, some.
The pedals, while Kim Reynolds was driving it, the pedals moved.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody had beat that. Anyway. That was
yeah. So it was like, ooh. You know, so, yeah.
Well, that didn't clarify anything. it just got people's blood up, which is great.
No, I want to talk about the cat and mouse game between you guys,
the
assessors, and us, the creators, right? Yeah. So when you first drove the Viper, we had a Situation Room. And we brought in, we read all their stuff. And we're like, okay, they're right about this. Oh, shit. It was one of those. We dissected every word, every line. And the TA was a project that was a thought. The parts were actually being made already as Mopar accessories. And then all we did was put them all in one car and said, let's just sell it already built up. And it became the orange TA that we had. You were the first ones to drive it.
It was all. I still remember that car.
And to this day, it's one of the most valuable Vipers.
Yeah, because it's very super low volume.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Did you make more or you did a TA2?
Yes,
was
we
that
did.
Was that
had
rarer?
A wing had a wing on it and stuff, a little more downforce. But the first one is the most sought after.
Okay, the first one is
and the orange color.
The orange color.
And I did that color on purpose for our friends from Stuttgart.
Ah,
yeah, gotcha.
It was very cool. Okay, let's get to something happy real quick.
Yeah. Well, we got to get into the modern stuff.
All right, real quick.
Yeah.
Real quick.
Memory lane here.
ACR. Yeah. Right, for ACR, fifth gen ACR. To this day, still one of the best performance cars I've ever driven. In fact, I was recounting the story this weekend. This guy Bruce was letting me drive his 765 LT McLaren around Laguna Seca. And then Bruce, he's in his probably yellow, lime green Viper on slicks. I mean, I think it was purple. Anyways, he reels me in. And I'm like, what an amazing car. Yeah. Like, it's still
out there.
Yeah, it's still just a crazy car. So, how did that – and I know you had an ACR previously, but the quality level of this one – and quality is the wrong word. The performance capabilities.
Yeah.
This car is still competitive against a Senna
as a production car. Shout out to Mike Scheinling and Jeff Reese, two engineers that love aero. They're like the Adrian Newey's of SRT.
Right.
And they said, let us at it, please. And they came back with this wing. You've seen the wing.
I've eaten off of it, yeah.
And I actually thought initially, that's too big. That's vulgar. And they're like, it's what we need. The rest is history.
Okay. Yeah, I just props for putting that one out there. Still, I still tell people, should I get a first-gen Audi R8. I'm like, why don't you get an ACR for half the money?
I'll say this. Yeah. Every other OEM is now growing their wings. I mean, we were the first to put this. You know, you could sleep a human on our wings.
Yes.
Right. All right. Let's keep going.
Okay. Let's get to the modern era now.
The inevitable
part of the show, which is
Ralph is begging for coffee.
Yeah. You guys, right before Pebble Beach, you did a thing around one of our events, actually, or it's actually your event. Dodge presents Roadkill Nights.
Mm-hmm. It's a group event.
It's a group event. So you showed off a new EV, a muscle car.
Yes.
I think Johnny's got a lot of questions about it.
Two.
It did really well as stories go, we love it. Actually, funny story. Our rendering of what we thought it would be was our top story for one of our top stories for the year. We were way off what we thought we gave
Who
it.
Who does those? I want a long walk in the park with your artist.
We got a lot of people to do it.
So does Rivian.
Hey, you know, it would be really helpful if you just sort of maybe slid us the right direction, because otherwise we're just going to do
it. You know what Tobias?
I have to say sorry to everybody that thinks we did that. It's anyway, sorry.
I know. Tobias Moore, he'd always do with me. On his phone, he'd say, this is what it looks like. 1, 2, 3, and then put the phone away. So, okay, at least
we love it, actually. We love the banter. It's fun.
Oh, no. It generates a lot of traffic, but so did your story. Mm. You did an event. You had the car. It was a dramatic. The lights came down, music playing. And then this wild looking, you have to, I won't do it any justice to it, describe it. Just Google search.
Go to MotorTrend.com.
Right. Oh, yeah, and search Dodge Daytona Chart.
Banshee,
sorry, the concept.
Banshee.
And
He tries.
It has a noise. It's an EV.
Right.
It's an experimental, yes.
So let's pause for a second, because I want to ask you about this, because
Can we talk about the design first?
Well, I was going to say,
spent
do
four
you
4 years working on this thing? You want to talk about
does your look design is your purview, but does that include sound design? Does it include software UX design? Or how does that work for you? Or should we just
It's in our UX group. Yes, I own user experience, which it's a new thing, by the way. It's a brand new space, so we're learning about that. And as Tim Kaniskis talked about during the launch, that we put in the provisions for some 132 decibel creation of a sound. Now, what you heard, I think we had some issues on the day.
So it came through
the PA system. It wasn't exactly the car doing it the way we know it can do it, because we've actually tested it, and it's pretty cool. The good news is infinitely tunable. It's something, as a concept, we can play with. It's such an interesting space. Do you give an EV car a sound, or do you let it be?
So, I mean, AMG, just so you know, you probably do know, but they've had a sound department since 2012.
Yep.
And it's dedicated to, what does an electric AMG sound like?
Yeah, and we have sort of that going on, but we also work with companies like Perception, for example, on the outside. They're out in New York that do the movies, sound for the movies, for the movie industry. Mm-hmm. So it's a collab, let's say, to understand the next gen. Same idea. We're in a think tank mode about that. But I think about the Italian engineers trying to make a Ferrari V12 sound good. Whatever comes out of the valve at the cylinder head isn't what comes out of the pipe.
No.
That takes a lot of tuning, a lot of science, a lot of engineering. it's no different than what we're trying to do. If you had a thesoscope on an electric motor and you it does have a sound, it has a character to it. It's a little more faint, it's more distant, but it's there. How do you augment that? How do you attach a visceral experience to that? Hmm.
And that's great. And I was also going to say this new obsession with the volume of production cars. Mm. Like, you know, my friend has a Diablo SV, you know, hot car, rad car. It's quiet. Doesn't make any noise at all. You know, cars got loud about, you know, 6 years ago.
It's funny you mention this because this weekend, of course, a lot of people had seen the same reveal as you're mentioning, and that's all they talked about. So, Ralph, tell me more about this, about the Charger and the sound.
You're being way nice about it, too.
We haven't got to the part that upsets me.
Oh, well, let's go there.
The transmission. So, like, the sound, okay, it's a little pandering.
I did read of it. You had some issues.
But the transmit, so it doesn't, I know it's a concept, okay. But the theory of the concept is you don't have gears because it's an electric car.
You need Kaniskis in the hot seat, not me. This is his brainchild.
You're speaking through Kaniskis.
I just make it look pretty.
But it does a power interrupt, so it feels like it's
shifting. I can't talk
gears.
About it.
It's
a concept.
Talk about what the concept does.
It's about viscerality at the end of the day. Think about it, right? How do you create a visceral experience? And if you think about that, and I've driven a lot of electric cars. We have every electric car.
I drove
a Lucid this weekend. I've driven every electric car on the planet practically. And that initial torque, that sensation being set back in the seat, just like muscle cars, drag racers, same thing. Mm-hmm. That's usually the best part till you shift again and you feel it again, right? So how do you repeat that sensation and play with that experience at will?
Does it slow the car down, though?
Not even measurable. Okay.
Well, it's measurable.
Okay, hold on. I want to talk about this. All EVs are going to do 0 to 60 in 5 seconds or more, right?
No.
So when you
three
say
seconds yeah,
three, yeah,
three
when you
seconds.
Say slow down, there's going to be you can't. Most humans can't tell the difference between 2.5 seconds and 2 seconds or three seconds. Yeah. So
look, people can't tell the difference between 8 seconds and four seconds.
Remember that caliper we talked about before? It had a better engine than the SRT4, and they had calibrated the torque to be a flat curve.
Right.
It felt slower, even though it was faster.
Right.
Because your body wants to, like an airplane, your body wants to feel that torque build, right? Okay. So that's what it's about.
Okay.
I'll leave it there.
I'll tell you what. That's a pretty good answer.
It's
a pretty good answer. I'm still like, there's, you know, I can handle a certain level of pandering, but like, that seems like.
All right. So, we'll let you off the hook over the stuff you're sort of not directly like the shifting is right. Whatever.
But the design.
Let's go back to the design.
But, go back. Hold on. Before we leave that subject, because I should get off the hook willingly, but think about the energy behind that question. We're trying to make EV cars fun.
Right.
But
at the end of the day.
Here's my thing, though, right? You just drove a Lucid, Rivians. Those are fun.
Yeah.
And I took a Lucid, 1,050 horsepower Lucid up Angeles Crest the other day. Time of my life.
Yeah.
Like, you
What's
know,
the price tag of that car?
A lot.
So we're bringing fun to the masses.
Yeah, that's what we do best. Okay. Yep. Fair. That's good. Good response. I'm just saying. Again, it's been like Koenigsegg did that automatic manual, right? So it's a real automatic, and then they literally put like a really nice manual in there, which isn't a manual; it's still electric. You know what I mean? So it's like
I think we're going to the bar tonight and going to continue this conversation. This is good stuff,
and like because everyone was losing their mind about it, I'm like, but it's still fake, like. Mm. You're like so like a really good fake is what you're excited about, you know? I don't know. So
well, I think it's the bigger question.
I totally understand.
It's work in progress. And this feedback is powerful, by the way. All this feedback we're getting is good stuff for a concept.
Because the bigger question is how Dodge as a brand arrived at this moment, right? Which I actually quite like. The statement, I hope I don't butcher it like the concept card name, but it's performance made us do it, right?
Yeah.
But that's the tagline.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, which is great, right? Because to your point, and this is something I literally just got out of a meeting telling my senior executives, like, look, here's the problem. In the future EVs, they're going to solve for range, right? Everything's going to get over 400, 500 miles, whatever. They're going to solve for recharge time. You're going to go from 20 to 80% in like 20 minutes. It's going to be great.
Or much less. Yeah.
Or much less. And they're all going to be really fast. We're already starting to see like 3 seconds to 60 is no big deal. Two seconds is
my,
next horizon.
My pickup truck's 3.2 seconds.
Right. You know,
so who stock.
So who cares after a certain point when all of this, when the performance from the battery charge time to the acceleration is basically a commodity? How is a brand... Do you differentiate?
Great
How
question.
Do you make this relevant? How do you make it so that somebody wants to buy a Dodge versus a Tesla versus a Hyundai Ioniq 5, right? So yeah, yeah. Was any part of this the brief for when you were drawing, sketching? And
yes, it was. And also it almost didn't even have to be because all my designers got it right away because they're also enthusiasts. They also love cars, right? Especially my Dodge team is exactly that. So that was a brief. Design a car you would drive, you would want. You would want to look at, you know, that whole cliche thing I always say is like you walk away and turn around and look back at it.
Yeah.
And at the end, the aesthetics matter, proportions matter. And the other thing no one talks about is it's hard to make an electric car look good if you put the battery pack underneath the driver.
Super hard. You got to do an SUV. Yeah.
It's weird. Very tough. So, cars look so weird, fought for every waking millimeter because that concept car is really faithfully done in terms of. It's a science, like Tim said, it's not a science project, right? It's a science project, but it isn't because we want to learn something from it.
But yeah. scale it for us. How much? Because it's going to be smaller than the current your current platforms, the Charger and Challenger, right? It's a little bit shorter.
No, same. The package is superior.
I was going to say it looked big. It looked like a big.
It's the same size, but the package is superior. Yeah, it's a hatchback, so it has tons of room in there. So.
And then it's got, and then the I don't know what do you call the. The wing and the nose.
The R-wing.
And it's got...
Tim named it after me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we fought for it. It's great. It's not easy to do.
That's cool.
So it's just like a...
I didn't even know he did that until the day. He's like, it's called the R-wing. I'm like, why is it called the R-wing? He goes, I named it after you, Ralph.
That's cool.
So for those
oh, dude. Hey, congratulations.
Yeah, I'm like, aw.
That's
For those playing at home, it's like the spoiler you'd see at the back of the car, but it's kind of on the front. And it's got basically an air gap of
It's a lot. You can put your whole fist through it.
Okay, so it's probably like 4-inch gap. And is that a flex because there's no
– Yes. It's to celebrate the fact that it's an EV.
Right.
But it actually increased aero quite a bit.
Sure.
A huge improvement there.
But I liked it a lot because, you know, going back to the Countach, like front wings generally suck. Like you know what I mean? It's either a mustache or
in design,
a snowboard.
In design, we call this, and my design brothers out there, we call it a second read, right? Okay. It's not the first read. The first read is that wonderful, iconic look.
Right.
Then you walk up in a car and you get the second read.
Right.
Whoa.
Well, and what that means to the lay people is when you look at this thing from the side, you're like, oh, it looks kind of have a, I don't want to say traditional, but it's got a somewhat traditional kind of profile, right? And then from the front, again, you see
it's a muscle car, yeah.
Yeah. You see this as a monolith, as a single piece, until you actually can get to an angle where you see the air gap between, either from the A pillar looking down towards the headlight, or you actually squat down low from the front and you see how much space there is, and you're like, holy moly, what is this? What does this mean? That means there's no engine in here. What's going on? This is an EV.
But that's a great point because I talk about this all the time. It's like, you know, Audi 20 years ago, they were like, let's put a really big grill on a car, you know, and like, so the industry followed suit. Well, now it's like, you don't need a big grill because, you know, you just don't need it. So now, you know, what's the face of a car?
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, so it's a great question. You know, so
the grills, they've never been bigger. I mean, the grills are just.
Oh, you look at a Camry. It's like it's past the headlights. Yeah. Literally, the grill goes past the
headlights. Well, this next question is what will cause Scott to come breaking through the glass.
Oh, poor Scott.
What happens to the R-wing if you have to put like an engine in the car, though?
Next question.
Weird. Okay.
We call Subaru. We get a box. We buy boxers from him.
All right. Okay. All right. We'll come back to the Leaning Tower of Power later. I have a question, though, going back to what you were saying about, you know, the power made us do this and how do you differentiate it, make an electric car fun. ADAS, so like self-driving stuff.
Ugh.
And I asked this question years ago.
I really need more coffee now.
Yeah. No, real quick. It's not a bad question, but it's not bad. It's not like pointed at you, but I hope he's out of prison now. But Professor Dr. Engineer Hackenberg, when he was running Audi, you know, he went to prison for Dieselgate, but smartest person I've probably ever met. He was giving us this whole thing about self-driving and levels of autonomy and all this. And I said, well, if you're Audi, like, you may sell an A3 and you make an R8. Like, are you going to have R8 software for self-driving? Like, is it going to, like, give you the aggressive self-driving and the A3? And he looked at me, he's like, as if he'd, like, you know, like, they hadn't really got that far yet. This is a while ago. It's been, you know, Dieselgate was a while ago, 7 years ago. But, like, is that something, like, is Dodge going to have a different ADAS strategy than Maserati, for instance?
I can't talk about that.
You can't talk about
but
it.
But I know we're packaging the sensors. All our cars are going to have that capability.
Yeah, you got to have it. Yeah,
the beautiful, just like anything else, you can give a character. I think you can.
Oh, you can give a character.
And there is some cool.
You talked about it.
Yeah,
you
there's some cool, just like we do today on our dynamics. Like SRTs have different dynamic restraints than a normal car.
Right. Same thing.
So I'll leave it there. I'm not an engineer.
Yeah, you know, that's an easy cop out because like, I know what you do.
Next question:
Is SRT still around? Like,
yeah, okay. Yeah. Actually, on the concept, we had SRT on the steering wheel, on the license plate. I mean, yeah.
Because I was going to say, what does that mean? How do we contextualize that?
It's transitioning, right? So SRT was the engines were the basis of SRT, right? Now the EV powertrains are becoming the next thing, right? How do we develop that maximum viscerality?
Right.
Again, SRT is about viscerality, not necessarily being the fastest. There's always someone faster.
Sure.
Always. So
sure.
It's about the experience, the tangible intangibles of making you fall in love with a car.
And I would bet that all electric motors designed to date, you never had to put the Dodge filter on them, right? They were just like, well, probably should, if you have a choice between quiet and loud, you probably should make it quieter. Probably, you know, put some insulation.
Johnny, there's like stator spacing makes a difference.
Right. No.
There's so much cool science to it.
Yeah. You said you're not an engineer. okay, look, you're a racer.
I live with them. I hang out with them.
I saw Ralph on the Milli Mie.
Yeah.
We did the Milli together.
Yes, that was a good time.
Yeah.
You're a racer at heart.
Yes.
You were just telling me you've been recently, you know, in like driving radicals around.
Yes.
And you've been doing all that, like, and you had the lap record at M1 for your ACR
for a while, yeah,
for a long time
till they had the. This damn festival came through, but anyway.
EV racing is EV racing on your agenda at all?
Of course, I'd love to jump in those Formula E cars one day. I mean, Klaus has been to a few races, my buddy in Germany and Europe, and he says they're awesome.
Okay,
and the cars, I guess, are tough, so they bang each other because I guess they're built a little stronger.
My friend, you know Marino Franchetti, Dara's brother.
Oh,
he,
I know.
He did, yeah, great guy.
Marino's
he did,
amazing.
Yeah, he is. He did Formula E, and he was saying that it's like they're really like armor-plated.
It's got NASCAR kind of driving and Formula-type situation.
How you jump straight to basically the top series. I was thinking like, well, you know, we're going to go like do some like
– Nah, I'm going to skip
right. right.
But obviously we've all done Formula – I mean electric go-karts. They're fun.
Yeah. Okay,
different totally. Style or heavier.
Well – and we're running out of time, but I do want to. I kind of want to come back to this idea that you are. I mean, it's incredible, ladies and gentlemen. Look at this guy. He's 30 years at the same company. Doesn't look a day over 30 itself. But what are you when you think about where the future of the automobile is going?
Wow!
And we're already in the moment of EVs. You guys are already designing them.
Yep.
We're really trying to start to popularize the term software-defined vehicle, SDV, where the user experience and the software kind of governs it. Do you care at all? We have a guy on staff, my dear friend, colleague, Frank Marcus. He's like, Ed, you know, by the time autonomous vehicles come, I'm going to be dead and gone in the grave. Like, I don't care.
So you look at the youth as
the youth.
Yeah.
The youth.
And I drove my 68 Charger 330 miles to come see you, right?
Right.
And every thumbs up I got were literally 25-year-old kids.
Right.
28-year-olds, 25. Right. They don't even know what it is.
Right.
They just know somehow that makes them feel something and they want to stick their thumb out the window. Some may know what it is.
Yeah, sorry.
It's something out of
the Where are you going, bro? But my point is that the passion's there. And we have to be careful, right? Not to make these things commodities.
And I was going to say, thank you for saying that because I walk around car shows and that whole horrible narrative that like kids don't care about cars.
Do.
I'm like, nothing could be further from the truth. Nothing.
I agree 100%. Yeah. I see it all the time everywhere.
Yep.
See it. Anyway, my point is
cars need to be cool.
Now, if everyone is chasing 501 miles of range in the same, the science is going to make the car look somewhat the same. And I always tell my guys there's a reason airliners look the same because they all have the same requirements. So now when science starts to get pretty good, the batteries are getting better, we're anticipating that as we're designing away. I'm working on 11 different EVs as we speak. And they're all different. They all share the same componentry, but you would never know they're from the same people. I mean that's the beauty of it. Some may have more range than others. Mm-hmm. We're using that we're allowing ourselves some room to have character in the cars. And on top of that, tuning of the cars, how they deliver the power,
if you can do it right, you can do it. I point out, you know, Volkswagen Group to everybody. Yeah. I go, look, the Touareg the A4 and the Urus and Bentayga, it's the same platform.
Yeah.
You know, they
it's
just
that
do it
same
right.
trick again.
They just do it right. Yeah.
But if you think about it, we're spending a little – once you've got those components, the EDMs and the battery, all that stuff figured out, then you can actually have more to do on the rest.
But this guy's still talking about – when you talk about those are old cars at this point, Bentayga, yeah. Urus. Like you're talking about – that's still electromechanical. I'm talking about for you. Mm. Now you just told me 10 minutes ago that you're now part of design – your whole program includes UX.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It has how for a while.
How do you do that?
It's the minute you download the app on your phone. It's the minute you come to the car and it talks to you and welcomes you and you open the door and there's theater. And there's so many ways to give the car presence, character, emotion, all that stuff. And even more than you have today in a car because of the power, the computing power that's available to us. And which we're building literally a team of software people, at 3,000 software engineers that we're hiring. Which is something an auto company, Tesla did some of that before, but this is new to our industry.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's inevitable.
Yes. Everyone's doing it. Literally everyone's
doing it.
But
you can hire them and stick them in a room. That's a mistake you can make, is hire them all and not tell them what to do, right? So our job is trying to figure out how to tell them what to do to make the experience unforgettable.
But can you?
Yes.
No. I'm saying don't you wake up in a cold sweat and go like, man. I don't even know.
Of course I do. I've been doing that for 30 years.
So the analogy is
mostly because my wife likes the room at a different temperature.
Right. This room is freezing.
That's a whole other.
The analogy is, look, everybody says, look, cars are becoming smartphones on wheels. Yeah. You've heard this. Yeah. And everybody points to the disruption that the iPhone delivered, right? Yeah. And here's the iPhone. It came and everyone's like, oh, iPhone. Yeah. No, all the buttons are gone. Glass screen. It's like that actually wasn't the disruption. The disruption was the App Store. Yep. Nobody had thought of this App Store thing, and then nobody realized what could – and all of a sudden, 2 years later, we're all hailing complete strangers in the middle of Manhattan to come pick us up in this thing called an Uber. Yep. Like there's a moment like that coming through software. Yep.
But Ed, think about it, right? We don't know what we don't know yet, to be honest. We have to be humble about this and say, I can't predict the future, even as much as we try.
It's your job, though. You're the head of design.
I do a lot of that.
This rolls us nicely into what I think can be the last question because we've got.
Let him finish. He's like this is your job to predict the future.
But we're trying to do is give ourselves room and make sure we're not boxed out. So we're putting lots of good stuff in the car that can allow us to tune it and respond very quickly. So the cars are magical to them. Stay tuned.
What do you want him to say? I feel like you're trying to pull an answer.
No, because I wake up in a cold sweat trying to figure out how we're gonna. Cover this stuff, like because we're only talking about the sexy stuff, the user experience and the AR VR and the call cool stuff. There's all this other stuff that software needs to deliver, that needs to be invisible and operate in the background, but be like rock solid, like cybersecurity and safety and ADAS.
And we're on it.
Don't cover the invisible stuff.
Right. It's hard
to photograph,
and you have to be careful and know to partner too. When you don't know what you're doing, you partner. And that's been our philosophy, right? We're partnering with some amazing companies.
You guys are partnering with BMW up to level 3 ADAS, and then level 4 plus, you're going with Waymo.
Yep, and we have Amazon. We have a bunch of cool partnerships going on. So
we had some second-year Art Center design students, transportation design students in, and we asked them
Maddie and Preston,
where do you want to be in 10 years and where do you see yourself in 20? And real quick, Maddie is still my favorite thing that's ever happened on this show because she goes, 10 years I want to be working for whoever. 20 years she goes, oh, I'll be 42. Oh, man.
I'll be old.
It was the Ed and I were just like.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Dodge in 10 years, because maybe you'll get to retire at some point in your life. Dodge in 10 years, Dodge in 20 years. Is there Dodge in 20 years?
Hells yeah.
All right. Let me get, what are we looking at in 10? And this is all,
Wow.
Yeah.
I hope there's still passion. And I think we're the youngest.
There has to be.
By the numbers, Dodge is one of the youngest, if not the youngest, one of the youngest brands out there in terms of who buys them. It's amazing. The age group, right? And the culture that's happening. Some of it is quite wild, to be honest with you. A little crazy stuff going on out there with the cars.
You mean the pool noodles standard equipment?
But they're going to grow up wanting to follow Dodge. And that's the thing, too. We underestimate the power of the brands. We sell 4 million cars a year, 14 brands. And most of those brands are passionate brands.
Right? As an Alfa Romeo owner, hell yeah.
And everyone thinks they're going to just evaporate. No, they're following us. They want. A lot of them are waiting for us to do the next thing, and that's something we don't take lightly. So how do we bring them to this new world, keep them in the game, keep them in love with our brands, give them what they want and listen to them, And every time we talk to them, I hear latent needs. That's why I love going to car shows and bumping into owners, because there's always a latent need that comes out. And I put that in the back of my mind.
Define a latent need.
They describe a frustration they have with their car, or something they like about another brand but they want it in our brand. Or gotcha. Or literally, I want a car that does this and it does that, but it doesn't exist yet.
Oh, right. Right.
So we have to fuse those things together. Actually, the charger concept is exactly that.
Right.
I need a UV, but I hate UVs. I love my charger, but and boom, we put a hatchback on it and the seats go down. It has the same volume as any of the D-segment UVs.
Hmm.
But it makes your heart pitter-patter. There's so much cool stuff about that the formula is still workable.
Right, and then, but anyway, so 20 years. So in other words,
you're going way out there.
Yeah, well, look, if you're partnering with
Waymo, I'll be selling lemonade in the Bahamas.
Yeah, hopefully,
20 years
from now. I'll be drinking it. But for the sake of this show, so in other words, we can get to this point where level 4, level 5, like cars don't necessarily have to have like steering wheels, a windshield, pedals, like you know what I mean. Like, what does Dodge exist in this future?
I don't know. Do you remember WALL-E, that movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope that's not what happens.
Well, it has a happy ending.
Yeah.
They land back on Earth. I hope part of that happens.
It just morphs in the car.
Well, I mean, this has been awesome.
It's way too short. I can keep going.
I ran out of things to ask.
We have all this stuff.
We had a lot of stuff there.
What is Scratzog? What is that?
Half of it. Yeah, okay, fine. Let's end with the name.
All
right. So you could put the logo. You put the Fratzog.
Yeah.
Which... I'll date myself here. I always forget. I was like, what is that thing called? I keep coming up with Zagnut, which is Zagnut, if you guys remember, from Beetlejuice. You remember the movie Beetlejuice?
Yeah, of course.
Michael Keaton? Right. It's the name of the candy bar in...
seriously?
Yeah, it's Zagnut. So I keep going, Zagnut? It's like, no, it's Fratzog. And it's actually when you guys, when you explain the sound, so, Fratzogic.
Fratzonic.
Fratzonic.
It's actually on the thing.
Yeah.
On the sound emitter.
Fratzonic.
But Fratzog doesn't mean anything. It was an Art Deco name they just came up with.
I love it.
It has no meaning, but we're giving it meaning now.
What's the symbol? What's the...
They just made it up.
That people have theorized on social media that it's some kind of satanic kind of thing.
No.
Obviously.
It's just a cool logo that... I remember my dad's Dodge Dart had it on the window. It was a seal.
Yeah. I remember seeing it. I never knew it had a name until an article came out. But I always saw it.
Giant inside joke of it. It's like in silhouette, it turns into...
No, because you're right, though. It's probably just like someone said, hey, we need to fill a space on the C pillar. Like, right? Draw something.
There's a lot of stuff like that, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like a lot of the logos back in the day. So.
Yeah. He just winked at me. I think there's something way deeper.
If you line the three triangles up at a certain time of the year, the light goes through it and
Stonehenge.
There's a map to the...
Well. That's how you say Stonehenge in the original Gaelic. It's Fratzog.
All right. Well, look, listen, this conversation was inevitable at some point, whether we had a podcast or not. We're going to sit down and get Ralph on record on a bunch of stuff. I'm glad we did it this
way. I want to get Ralph off record on a bunch of stuff, because that's always a lot more.
Need more coffee.
I want it off record and then on record. But we are going to check in with you, sir, probably when something...
You know what I want? We can do... Oh, I don't know. This is always going to be a podcast, but one day I want to give him a ride in some of our EVs and see if he...
Why him? What do I mean?
No, me.
No, just him.
It's cool. Then we can't do that.
Please. Anytime. I'll be there.
Tell me if it has visceral effect.
Yeah. No, I'd love to experience it because, I'd love to. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, we'll set that up.
Cut of the same cloth.
Right. We'll set that up.
It's Montreal cloth.
As hurtful as it is.
That's fine.
We'll set that up.
As long as you're hurting Ed, I'm cool with it, Ralph.
And we'll run.
In fact, I don't care what the car says. I want to hurt Ed.
That's great.
You guys need to work it out, man. Yeah. Whatever's going on there.
We'll roll cameras and we'll roll audio for that.
All right.
But Ralph,
this was a pleasure.
It was awesome. Thank you so much.
You guys,
Johnny, more coffee next time.
All
right. I brought the backup bottle. I just left it in the other room.
Pre-made coffee. Yes.
And don't bring your wife.
All right. Take care.